Welcome to the Pint and Click podcast. I'm Dave. I'm here with Tony, as always.
Hello.
And today we have special guests Joel and Kristen.
Hello.
And we're going to have a podcast about recommendations, as we always do. We've got books, we've got comic books, we've got video games today, so it'll be exciting. We're all librarians and assistant librarians from the Des Plaines Public Library, and basically everything that we have is going to be at the library, either available now or soon. So if you like what we're talking about, come check it out. Tony, you're up first. What are we going to talk about today?
Yeah, I'm talking about The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild for the Nintendo Switch. It's also released on the Wii U. Nintendo. Very light spoilers ahead, but I don't think, unless you're a super fan of the game, that you'll be disappointed with any of the level of revealing I'm giving you. But this is an open world exploration game. The Legend of Zelda has taken many forms over the ages, and it's by now, I think, over 25 years old.
Yeah.
It is kind of at the same time of as an exploration and open world, meaning you can like traverse mountains and plains and fields and deserts and things like that. It's also got a lot of puzzles and action sequences as well, like combat sequences. So it's really a lot of games in one, in a way. And the story itself, though it's important, it sometimes falls in the background to the actual gameplay that's in front of you. So I won't go on too long about the story, but to give people a setting to understand this world, it's a fantasy world, and it's kind of a world decimated by some great calamity that kind of is as mysterious as it is magical. There's a lot of mysteries involved with it, and really Link, who is the protagonist and who you play in this game, is recovering those memories throughout this world and trying to piece together a way to confront this calamity, which is still has imprisoned Princess Zelda in Hyrule Castle. So it's a very straightforward plot. There is a goal in mind. As soon as you get thrown into this world, there's a clear goal, but there is no direct path given for that goal. And that's one of the things that this game is really unique about. It gives you an entire world to explore, and it gives you this sort of destination that is this Hyrule Castle to free, you know, and save this person, but also save the world from this oppression. But you can take, and every player will take, a completely different route to get there. And there's just so much variety in what you can and can't do. So the mechanics alone, game mechanics, is kind of like the lingo for how the game functions and how you scale mountains, how this character model on the screen interacts with its environment, are just very fluid, and it's a very beautiful looking game where, like, you can, if you see a large precipice overlooking a large lake and an island on that lake, you can make it a goal of yours to, I'm going to do what it takes to climb that. I'm going to get as high as I possibly can, and I'm going to paraglide from there to that island. That is my goal for the next, you know, for this play session or something. It really allows the player unprecedented freedom. It's really quite an accomplishment in a game, just because it creates these scenarios just by the very fabric of the terrain, which I've never seen in a video game before. So it really makes you appreciate kind of punishing terrain. It makes you appreciate weather effects. They're not just effects. It's not just rain graphics on the screen. It'll make it slippery to climb. Mm-hmm. If you're wearing metal, lightning will be attracted to you. if you go into cold climates, you either have to prepare by eating food that'll make you weather resistant, or actually donning clothes that are warmer. And the same goes true if you're in like an arid or a hot climate. You're going to have to wear something that'll reduce your body temperature so that you're not overheating. So it's a really interesting game in that it's punishing, and it doesn't prepare you for any of this in any of its like explanations or user interface. You kind of just have to learn it the hard way. So if you try adventuring up a mountain, the first thing you do is you start freezing, you know? So it's really quite an accomplishment, and it's open world thing. And then the puzzles come in as a way to progress you closer and closer to that ultimate goal. And it'll kind of develop your character in ways that you can find items and find more useful tools to help you along your path. Yeah, it's just a very outstanding game in and of itself. And it's actually, when you think about it, very different from Zelda games as you know them. I don't know, Dave, if you've played, you've probably played a lot of Zelda.
I have played a lot of Zelda. I've not played a lot of this game yet. I do have a question for you.
Yeah.
Tony and I did talk a little bit about this game outside the podcast, so I want to ask a pointed question. How many hours have you spent playing this game, would you estimate?
Really quickly did I rack up like 40-plus hours, 45 hours in it. I've since like given myself a little space from the game because I was playing long play sessions of like a few hours at a time, just because it's a really immersive game. And I set aside time to play it because there was a lot of hype around it. Like, oh, this game is supposedly really good. So, though it's interesting, like, you can get through a large chunk of the game in that period of time, or even less, Whereas people, like a friend of mine played the similar amount, but he hasn't gotten nearly as far, like story-wise or into the actual like meat of the game as I had. It's because he's just taking his time, kind of going and exploring nooks and crannies and side quests and things like that, which there are just seemingly innumerable. I mean, there's inhabitants that will talk to you, you know, like merchants and things that'll have clues and riddles for you to solve, and you just have to interact and... You can go down those rabbit holes all day if you want. That could be the whole game for you, you know. So it's a huge game in that regards, in the scale.
It's huge, and I think it's beautiful, for one.
The graphics are.
It's almost pastel colors, or pastoral would probably be better to describe it. Green grasses, gray mountains, blue skies, bright sunshine. There's shadows cast and things like that that really make it seem like a living world. And it's enormous. Like you were talking about different climates. There's snowy climates. There's desert climates. There's water areas, mountainous areas. The list goes on and on. And all those have like their own color palette.
And that would almost compare the aesthetics to like a Miyazaki or Studio Ghibli style film where it's trying to even look like anime. It's kind of cel shaded over the actual textures. So it just blends together and looks like it's a rendering of an anime or something. So.
I have a question. So for those who are unfamiliar, what console?
Nintendo Switch, which is the new handheld TV hybrid console, just released in the start of March. But it's also on the Wii U. Originally, this game was planned to launch on that system like maybe a year or two ago. It just got delayed several times. But yeah, I mean, it's a Nintendo exclusive, and it's done by Nintendo's studios, game development studios. So it's never going to really leave the Nintendo console, but...
So is the game only played through the viewpoint of Zelda, or can you play different characters?
Yeah, but it's actually Link is the elf character that's going to rescue the Princess Zelda. So it's just an often misunderstood thing that it's Link's the guy that's in the green suit.
And that's who you are?
Yes.
Yeah, and anyone else. Like over his shoulder, like third person. So you kind of like are always looking at his back and the back of his head as he runs around the world.
Yeah, kind of. There's some really awesome mechanics for the action combat. I didn't get to mention too much, but it'll kind of go a little bit more close to first person when you like take out a bow or something, or it'll narrow that viewpoint. And then you can also kind of look through a binocular like thing to kind of get a sense of range. And when there's something way off in the distance, if you want to say, oh, I want to pick that tower to go and navigate to, you can actually zoom in on it in the first person and actually give it a marker, and then that'll appear on your map. It's a really streamlined interface, but it's the whole game is built around that exploration mechanic. That's where it really excels.
So that's The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild for Switch and Wii U. They'll be at the library soon. I'm sorry, they're not available today, not right now, but they'll be here very soon. And you're probably going to have to place holds on those because I expect Zelda to be very popular. Thank you, Tony. We'll move on next to Kristen. Kristen, what are you talking about today?
So today I am talking about Difficult Women by Roxane Gay. And for those who are unfamiliar, Roxane Gay is a professor and a writer. She is a New York Times bestseller of the book Bad Feminist. And she also wrote a novel, Untamed State. Difficult Women is a short story collection. I had the pleasure of hearing Roxane Gay speak last week at Senn High School in Chicago. And one of the first things that she kind of talked about is how she thinks very thoughtfully about making women characters multidimensional. And in the book Difficult Women, you really get to see that. Not only are they multidimensional, but they are living multifaceted lives. Something that kind of stuck out to me from the beginning was this idea of like the title, Difficult Women. So often women are described as difficult when we kind of set boundaries or when we say no, when we go against society's expectations of who we should be or how we should be living our lives. And as you're kind of reading the book, you're kind of wondering, are these women difficult? Are they not? Are they just really multidimensional people who maybe are both? And there are various themes in the book, and I can definitely say that violence is one of them. So it is a little bit of a darker book in a sense. And oftentimes these women characters, they have all these traumas, but they don't necessarily even share them with the people that are closest in their lives. And so you kind of see them navigating through having these traumas, trying to live their lives, and then also kind of butting up against society's expectations of them, whether it should be how they're living their lives or not. One of the biggest, you know, violence themes that kind of are through there is both physical abuse, but also sexual abuse. And the author, Roxane Gay, she is like a survivor of sexual assault. So in her other books, this is also a theme. So like it is prevalent in this book and it can kind of potentially be heavy, but I also feel like it's something that we don't actually even really read about. Like we know it kind of happens, but it doesn't get written about, and it doesn't necessarily get written about in fiction.
Sure.
So these are actual, you know, fictional stories. One of my favorite stories was Break All the Way Down. And in this story, this couple, they have a baby. And this is a little bit of a spoiler alert. They have this baby, and the baby gets ran over by a car.
Ooh.
Yeah, exactly, right? So it's like this unbearable trauma that you're just like, how do you live through this?
Right.
And the couple, like the woman's basically like, I can't even live in this house anymore.
Sure.
And one of the ways that she kind of copes with this is actually meeting another guy who beats her, essentially. And it's like her way of, I guess, alleviating her guilt and trauma until this boyfriend of hers, ex-girlfriend, or I don't even know, but the mother of his child, like, brings over the baby and was like, I'm giving this baby to you. And so this baby is kind of this point of reconnection with her and her husband. And they, like, leave the area. They, like, burn all the stuff that was their child's that's passed away. And so, yeah, so I feel like there are definitely these themes of violence, but there's also these themes of kind of surviving and also thriving and also very much directing their lives themselves. And so something that actually came up at the talk with Roxane Gay was people were like, well, what's your inspiration? And like I did, I share that she had sexual assault and that's part of it. But also something that she said is that some of her stories are inspired by very literal events. So she lived in an apartment that used to be a business. And so it had the ceiling was the tiles. So she was laying in her bed and the tiles, they were wet. And so there was kind of some flooding. And so she started to think about, well, what would it be like if for a woman everywhere she went, things were getting wet and flooding. And so she wrote this story about water, all its weight, about what would it be like wherever you go, things are getting flooded. Like, how do you have relationships? How do you live? And so it was interesting to hear her say that it's not always this like deep stuff. It's just like these random things that kind of pop in her head and she writes from there. Something else that I really love and appreciate about this book is that she shows, right, it's about women, but also she's showing that women have different experiences depending on their identity, like their race, their sexuality. So it's like we're not all having the same experience, but there still are these themes that kind of tie us together.
So it sounds a little dark, a little violent, as you said.
Yes.
But would you also describe it as inspirational or transformative or any of those qualities?
I would consider it inspirational because, like she said, that she's so intentional with writing multidimensional characters. I feel like oftentimes what we get in fiction is just exactly these more flat women characters. So with this, it's inspirational in the sense that you get to see the women as like a whole person, you know, or not just happy and smiling and laughing or just, I don't know, having romance, but that we actually, yeah, have multidimensional lives. And I think for fiction and even nonfiction, it's like we don't have a lot of women writing multidimensional characters. So that is definitely inspirational. And especially an author who is very much in the limelight. You know, she's a New York Times bestseller.
Right.
So I think there are other women writers writing these characters, but they might not be as known. So she's kind of paving a path for that. And that is definitely inspiring.
Cool.
Would you say, like, the story that you mentioned about the weight of the water or something like that, it sounds like it would have opportunities to be funny. I mean, is there, can some of these more serious topics be helped by the tone?
That's a thing. I definitely wouldn't put Roxane Gay in a comedic genre. I mean, I think there are, not necessarily even just with that story, even though there is this darkness, it is interwoven like the other story I talked about, Break All the Way Down. You know, in the end, the couple, they have this baby. It's not their baby, but they end up with this baby and then they leave that town where everyone's like, we're so sorry, we're so sorry, and kind of start. And they also reconnect. The couple reconnects.
So it ends up being lighter
In
the sense that it's something else. It's a clean break. So
yeah, okay. But I definitely, if someone wants to laugh, I'm not sure this would be the book that I would recommend.
No.
But
I was just curious, like from a writer's standpoint, and how do you break up something very serious? But I guess that makes sense. That's another way to do it.
And she's a very concise writer. It's very powerful, her sentences, but she's very concise. So in a way, that kind of like alleviates some of the denseness of the book. Mm-hmm. And the stories are also, there are some longer ones, but there are some that are like 3 pages.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Kristen. That's Difficult Women by Roxane Gay. If it's not available at the library now, it should be soon, correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right. We're moving on next to Joel. Joel, what are you talking about today?
I also have a fiction book called News of the World by Paulette Giles. Mm-hmm. And it's completely different, yet very similar to Kristen's offering of Difficult Women. It is not a group of short stories. It is a novel, but it's a short novel, just over 200 pages. And it is a historical novel. And it is a character of a gentleman who reads newspapers to people for a living in 1870s Texas. Mm-hmm. And there is obviously not a great amount of communication and news that passes through. So he reads newspapers and charges a dime. The plot kind of goes with there is a girl who is captive of the Kiowa Indian band, and she is recaptured, and he must take her to her family in South Texas. Mm-hmm. So that's the basic plot. It's very simple and economical in its own language. Mm. It's a very beautiful book. The setting is very descriptive and a strong sense of place within the Texas landscape. It actually has a very big journey aspect to it. I thought if you took the quest aspect of The Hobbit and combined it with True Grit, it would be pretty much an accurate, it sounds almost fantastical, but it does have kind of like an almost fable quality to it.
Yeah.
With the simple language, and the character is very quiet. The main character, his name is Captain Kidd, almost allows you to feel the similar emotions that, you know, you can recognize yourself in that character.
So tell me about this fable quality or this journey. Like, is it just him by himself, or is there a camaraderie, a group?
Well, it's with the girl who has been taken captive, and she's actually headed back towards her family. Her mother and father were killed in the raid when the Indians actually took her.
Right.
But he's taking her back to her aunt and uncle. And they face rivers and mountains, and they face a bunch of different situations where they actually have time to bond together. You know, he recognizes the aspects of her culture that she has left behind in the Native American. Mm-hmm. But she remembers nothing from her original culture of the Texas settler, but she does remember the Native American, and she's very torn. Mm-hmm. He recognizes that and tries to encourage her to be her own person, yet he reteaches her the English language to function in society. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of interplay between them. And he's also remembering he actually has had 2 daughters, so he remembers them at that age. Mm-hmm. So they encounter different people. Obviously, not a lot of people are sympathetic to a young girl traveling through the Texas wilderness.
Sure.
There are some people who have nefarious plans, and you know, that comes up, and they navigate through that situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see the similarity to True Grit now with a young girl and an older man. And the movie we'll be discussing in a bit. Again, a young girl who finds a savior in an older man as they make a journey.
Yeah, it's actually one of the best books I've read in a very long time. It kind of hits any kind of genre you're looking for, like a Western or an adventure or not necessarily a romance, but some sort of like inspirational, heart-filling fiction. And again, like I mentioned before, it's only just over 200 pages, so it actually ends before you're ready for it to be over.
Oh, sure.
So it kind of gets out of Dodge before you're done with it. But if you're a fan of Craig Johnson or Larry McMurtry, it has definitely Out Under the Wide Open Stars and very descriptive of the food and makes you want to go traveling and go camping.
Yeah, that's what happens when I read The Hobbit and they talk about the hard cheeses and the stale bread. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of like, I could really go for a hard cheese right now.
Yeah, they mentioned baked beans and bacon and coffee.
Sure.
And you're like, I could go for a nice supper of that right now. I felt that it would appeal to a wide range of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like there's something in it for everyone, whether it's the description of the journey or this relationship, whether you identify with the older gentleman or the young girl maybe. It sounds like there's something in that relationship for anybody.
Yeah, and it also has, as far away as it is in the setting, it also has a lot of things to say about today's world.
Oh, okay.
Just basic being informed of your current events and possibly even escaping. A lot of these people who listened to the News of the World, they would come to hear not only what was happening out back east or what was going on, but they wanted to hear about volcanoes erupting in the Pacific or some things happening in London. So they got to escape through that aspect. And it really made me think of how we, as a culture, use the internet, you know, through getting information or through planning a vacation or something like that.
So it sure. Just,
I was struck when you were talking about, you know, this guy has a very powerful position because he's the one who's sharing the news with the people. So he, in a way, not only can the newspaper kind of potentially, you know, change what has happened or not, but he's also, in a way, kind of deciding what these people get to know mm-hmm. or not know. So that was standing out to me with this guy where I'm like, wow. You know, if he wanted to change a story, he could.
Yeah. Lead on half the state of Texas. Yeah, he certainly could.
Yeah.
Well, and there's a lot of political turmoil in Texas, too, at this point in the 1870s. It's just after the Civil War.
Come to think of it.
A lot of settlers are, you know, their settled land is being taken over, retaken by the Comanches and the Kiowas. Plus, there's a lot of local politics. There's clans going against other clans. Mm-hmm. So he is actually just trying to calm everything down and inform people, help them make informed decisions, and also help this girl through this state of turmoil.
Sure.
Cool.
Well, it sounds like fun to me. That's News of the World. Mm-hmm. And who's the author on that one?
Paulette Giles.
And that one is definitely available at the library. I assure you, we have many copies of News of the World. It's my turn next, and I'm going to talk about something irreverent and fun. I'm going to talk about Jughead. Jughead is Archie's best friend, and he's got a new graphic novel out. They've just rebooted Archie. There's been a relaunch, and there's brand new authors, brand new illustrators approaching Archie and Jughead and Veronica and Betty. There's even a new TV show called Riverdale on the CW, I think, if you haven't seen it. Anyway, I chose Jughead because it's written by Chip Zdarsky, who is a fantastic artist who's recently taken up the role as an author. He recently did the new reboot of Howard the Duck, and now he's doing Jughead. And Jughead is exactly what I hoped it would be. It's fun, it's silly, it's simple and dumb. It's a lot of fun to read. It's about Jughead, who is a teenager who's going to high school and having all the problems that a high schooler has. But he's a little bit fantastic. He likes to imagine himself as a secret agent or a superhero throughout the day. So you'll be reading about him in class, and then all of a sudden the book goes off on a wild tangent where he's, you know, been taken prisoner by some evil Bond villain, or he's flying through the streets of Riverdale trying to save the civilians from some terrible supervillain. When really it's just him, and he's a little bored in high school. He's maybe a little bit too smart for what's going on, and so maybe it's a little boring to him, and he needs some escape, he needs some fantasy, which is what I come to comic books for. And so I kind of relate to Jughead in this position. It has a very flat, cartoony style as well that serves that purpose. Like, there is so much going on. It has to transition between regular Jughead and superhero Jughead and secret agent Jughead. And so that very simple style of very stark colors and very specific outfits really help you identify, okay, now we're in the real world. Now we're in a fantastic world. Things like that, where if it was, you know, overwrought with detail, you might get confused. It is absolutely the opposite. I don't know if you've seen Riverdale. I haven't seen Riverdale, which is the show on TV, but Riverdale is supposed to be a subversive take on Archie. Its tagline is Riverdale's wholesome facade is exposed. And it's dark colors, it's a dark tone, and that is the total opposite of this comic book. This comic book is bright colors, it's lighthearted, it's silly fantasies, it's one story per comic book, which this is a trade that we have here at the library, so it's six separate stories. But each comic book, if it were in its comic form, would just be one story. So you don't get confused. You can read number three before you read number one. There's nothing to screw you up. Also, it's making news because Jughead is an avowed asexual in this book, which I didn't know this until I started reading the book and reading the news, but apparently Jughead has been a small icon for the asexual community mm-hmm. because while Archie's dizzy over Betty or Veronica, which one do I choose? Jughead just doesn't care. He's doing his own thing. he's not attracted to women. He's not attracted to men. He loves hamburgers, and he's perfectly confident in who he is. And again, I don't want to go back to this Riverdale show too many times, but in the Riverdale show, he's actually dating Betty, and that was kind of a betrayal of character for Jughead to show an interest in a woman. Whereas in the comic book, this comic book, Jughead, he actually describes his asexuality to another classmate, why it fits him so well, and how it benefits his life to embrace this sexual non-preference, I suppose you would call it. It's a little bit serious, but it's mostly hilarious. There's a new principal in school, and they get into some disagreements over whether or not Jughead's working hard enough, and hilarity ensues. That's basically the book.
So I want some clarification. Is Jughead a new comic or?
So it's Archie is, of course, a very old comic book. Mm-hmm. And Jughead is in the Archie comics with Betty and Veronica and all that. About a year ago, Archie Comics decided we're going to start over. Mm-hmm. We're going to hire new writers. We're going to hire new artists. We're going to have new stories. We're going to pretend that old stuff is old and this new stuff is what we're selling now. The first part of the new stuff is this graphic novel I have here, Jughead Volume 1. And there's an Archie book. There's a couple more books I can't think of right now. So this is new, but the character itself is very old.
It seems like the fact that he's asexual is kind of, a sign of, not that people weren't asexual before, mm-hmm. but, they're really LGBTQI and like asexual rights are mm-hmm. more in the forefront. So it's interesting that they decided to make Jughead asexual.
Well, at least avowed he may have been asexual the whole time. I'm not entirely clear on the history of the character, but he certainly wasn't out and proud mm-hmm. in the old books, but he is now. So,
cool.
Yeah, Chip Zdarsky, I wholeheartedly recommend, if you can see anything drawn by him, written by him, read Howard the Duck. He loves these little weird projects. He doesn't write Iron Man. He doesn't write Superman. He writes Jughead and he writes Howard the Duck. And those are his weird little corners that he likes to fill in.
Well, before they rebooted the Archie comics, I noticed that they started doing like Archie versus Predator.
Oh, right.
And they started going down these. They seem to have hit every kind of possible blind alley that they could have with Archie. And I'm really happy that they are breathing fresh life into this world.
Yeah, they were kind of grasping at straws there for a while.
Yeah.
Like, what's going to stick? Will Archie versus Predator get us more sales? Turns out not so much. Mm-hmm. But then they kind of made a decision to come back to, let's have character-heavy stories. Let's make it about Jughead. Let's make it about Archie. Let's mm-hmm. make it about Betty. Let's make it about Veronica.
And Reggie.
And more, who I can't name right now because I'm kind of new to the whole Archieverse. But yeah, it seems to be working. They hired quality writers and quality artists, and that investment is paying off.
They've always been terrific characters. So
right.
having their story told by people who can tell it in a fresh new way. And as you mentioned, Kristen, in the updated worldview.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And have maybe them to say something that they couldn't have said 40, 50 years ago,
mm-hmm.
have them actually say it in a comic book. That's pretty exciting.
So that is Jughead. I don't think it's called Volume. Yeah, Jughead Volume 1 says right on the cover in front of me. That'll be on the shelf at the Des Plaines Public Library just as soon as I return it downstairs. So check it out or place a hold or check out any of the other new Archie comics. I know that we got the new Archie by Mark Waid at least.
Those are also on Hoopla.
Those are on Hoopla. Good point. I forgot about that. So if you have a Des Plaines library card, you can sign on to Hoopla and you can stream them to your devices. And next we're going to have a group discussion. And this group discussion is about the movie Logan, which we all saw recently. So what did we think about Logan?
My first impression about this film was that it was refreshingly dark, which seems like an oxymoron, but it's like refreshing with its hard ideas, I think is the way to put it, and that mm-hmm. it was like way grittier, way more in your face and harsh than I anticipated, and that's what I found refreshing about it, because I think it's hard to avoid watching a lot of like Marvel media and superhero media, and DC, as you guys know, we didn't really deliver that much in this last year, but this X-Men, and I'm not familiar with very many of the X-Men movies, but this one really did deliver and kind of gave me something I didn't even know I needed out of a movie. It was such a strong movie, regardless of the fact that it was a superhero movie. I don't know. I really liked the R rating aspect of it.
I really liked the lack of capes mm-hmm. and uniforms, mm-hmm. and it wasn't, okay, now is the time of the part of the movie where we put on our fashion uniforms. And I also got the impression that they didn't have to cut stuff out to make it accessible for a younger crowd. Mm-hmm. They really just kind of told the story, and this is what the story is going to be, and it's rated this. And yeah, I agree with you. It's very refreshing to see that. Because these stories are hard-hitting. They punch you in the face a lot and make you think about it.
I was going to say, I liked it because something that you said earlier, Dave, which is this kind of like the little girl and then Logan as a savior. Well, I saw it really differently, which is I saw it as like, here's this guy. He's in this midlife crisis. Like, his powers that he used to have are barely there. Mm-hmm. He has to take care of his dad, Charles, and he's just kind of pissed off at the world. I feel like he's kind of in denial about it. You know, he's drinking, he's just grouchy and crabby. And I feel like this little girl for him was not so much he was a savior for her, but she kind of like reawoke in him who he is, his life, and basically giving him a sense of purpose again.
Yes.
And so for me, that was the most kind of remarkable aspect of the movie.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I didn't think about that at the time. As the big Marvel fan in the room, no offense to Joel, who's probably number two, I am not over the moon about this movie. I liked it. I recommend it. And I agree with everything that's been said so far. But I did think it was a little slow. It was a little long, especially in the second act. But the things I can count that were great about this movie are numerous. I love the acting. I love the script. I love the color palette in all the different locations, whether they were in Oklahoma City at the casino or whether they were in wherever they were in Mexico or when they were on the Canadian border. Like, they were all either beautiful and lush or desolate and empty. Just beautiful photography throughout the film. And I love the little girl, the actress, Daphne Keene. I thought she was remarkable.
Laura.
Amazing performance from this young woman who, it said introducing, so I assume she hasn't been in a film before. It says introducing in the opening credits.
It's quite an introduction.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even the settings, going to what you said with the color palette, but even the settings were desolate and really condemned buildings or glitzy, glamorous Oklahoma City casinos and like a lot of bright lights and snazzy valets and stuff. Nice hotel rooms. So there's like really no in between.
Yeah.
Except a part later in the movie, but that might have had more of a statement about that. But.
We'll avoid spoilers. So the basic plot is that there is this young woman who is in desperate danger. We don't really understand. Her supposed mother tries to contact the Wolverine to come and save her. And we're not really sure why she's interested in Wolverine or how she gets a hold of him. But then the girl is left with Logan, with Wolverine, Hugh Jackman, whatever you want to call him. And they embark on a journey. She wants to go to North Dakota. So they do. With Professor X in tow, they set off cross country. This film is very loosely inspired by the graphic novel Old Man Logan, which my wife, after we saw the movie, asked, how similar is it to the book? And I said, it's not similar to the book. For one, there's no Tyrannosaurus Rex in the movie, though there is in the book. But it still is a cross-country story of an aged old man, Logan, as he has to, you know, one last ride, one last adventure for the old hero.
But like very resistant,
yes.
You know, the whole time. Yes. It's like there's parts where you're just like, if you would have just believed people when they told you, like X wouldn't have happened.
Yeah,
you
know,
like, so I feel like there's part of the journey between them is him like basically either having to kind of come to wrestling with himself.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Definitely. And wrestling like with his relationship with like to Laura. And like you said, no spoilers, but be prepared to maybe cry a little bit at the end.
This is a dark movie. There are maybe four jokes in the movie, which I think are perfectly timed at like every half hour to just give you one breath of air. And that is it. Mm-hmm. It is not for children. It is rated R. I think Patrick Stewart adored the fact that he got to play a rated R Charles Xavier. He seemed to have a lot of fun with the role.
And one of the things I thought was just great and funny in and of itself was just how liberal Logan was with the F word and how he could say so much with just one word. And he could essentially portray his complete reluctance to even like humor the fact that there was a quest or some kind of charge waiting to happen for him. It was very characteristic of the character, I think, Wolverine, who really kind of wanted to do things his way, mm-hmm. I think. So whereas this was him knowing even before he even thought it smelled like something that he had to do, like a duty or something, turning it down, declining to have to fight, to have to do any kind of heroic thing ever again. Mm-hmm. You know, he's like done his time, right? And I think that's what made the whole reluctance so interesting, was that this thing was knocking at his door over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And it just continually forced his hand. So I was compelled by this story just because it was a inescapable quest for him.
Yeah, at the very beginning, it seems like his whole life purpose is waiting for Professor X to die so that he can die. It's like that's basically what he wants his life to be. And then this whole idea that you have to form new relationships with new people, you have to pull out the claws again and go on this adventure like he did not want to do. Mm-hmm.
And even to do that when, like, maybe you aren't the best anymore, you know, where it's like it was so much tied to.
Mm-hmm. When even the journey was taken, it was carried on by not necessarily one foot in front of the other, but it was always in an argument and almost in spite of, like, you know, I'm going to show you. And it was just this conflict that carried through all the way. It was a very unique way of having two characters travel with each other.
Mm-hmm. As a comic book superhero fan, I really liked the idea of Charles Xavier as dangerous. I think there's a line in the movie that one of the most powerful minds in the world, and octogenarian or something like that. Mm-hmm. Thinking about, you know, what sort of havoc that could wreak and what sort of danger the world can be in, then Wolverine, Logan, doing everything he can to just kind of keep it quiet. Mm. Keep it from happening again. Keep it from bothering anybody. Mm-hmm. He just doesn't want mutants to bother humans anymore. Like, there's been so much humans and mutants, and is there a cure? Is there a law? Should they be regulated throughout all the X-Men movies that have been going on for 15 years? And Logan's just like, I just want it to be over. I don't want any sort of controversy. I don't want any sort of conflict. I just want it to be over. And then it's not. It can't be.
And I feel like Mr. X...
Professor X.
I was calling him Charles.
Charles Xavier is his name.
So Charles, you know, he also serves as a reminder for Logan. Like, this is who we are. You can try to give me all these pharmaceuticals, and you can even do this in the name of, like, so-called saving the world, but, like, we are mutants. And also, I felt like his relationship with Laura, like, Charles and Laura and Logan, Charles was constantly kind of reminding Logan, like... this is kind of like what love looks like, you know? Right. Laura and Charles have this very loving relationship, and Logan's just like, I can't deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
like, yeah, I love that.
Dean. Yeah, it's sweet.
There's a line in the farmhouse
when the farmhouse discussion.
Xavier pulls him close and says, this is how it's supposed to feel like.
Exactly, yes.
Mm-hmm. And they're reminiscing about what used to be and what they used to have, and a family and things like that.
So. Talking about the school and talking about all that.
So he's definitely plays this wise... older man who I think is like a reminder for Logan.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the aspect that it was referential back to itself, where he notices a comic book.
Yes.
He's like, that's not the way this happens.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
And
there are comic
irony,
books in the movie, yeah.
The irony just was fantastic.
I don't know what you've read or what you think you know.
Right, about Wolverine. But let me tell you the truth. He is old.
And look at me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, part of me wonders, like, are more and more movies just going to have to be self-referential because we continually revisit these movies and IPs, you know, where Superman is a person in the world of Superman, you know, and there's a toy of Superman or something, you know. So I just feel like it's just par for the course sometimes, but in this movie it was really good because it actually had a bearing on the plot in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
It was something in the
comic book. So in the Marvel comics, if you're reading, you know, current Spider-Man or X-Men or what have you, there are Marvel comics. And so the movies usually don't address that. They say, let's forget about it. Let's pretend there's no such thing as a comic book while we create this world for this movie character. And so this is the first one that introduced the idea of there are Marvel comics, and they're kind of hyperbole about metahumans, about superheroes or mutants or whatever it may be. And so this is the first movie to cross that line and incorporate that idea that there are still comics in the Marvel Universe or the Fox Universe, whichever one this is. I was kind of happy to see that because it's kind of a funny thing. It gives notoriety to the character, especially in Logan's case, which he doesn't want. Mm. He doesn't want people believing this false ideal version of him that is presented in the comics. It kind of was a stand-in for the audience to understand that there's this idea of Wolverine that maybe I don't have from watching 15 years of movies, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. this little girl has about him and her caretaker has about him and maybe Xavier has about him mm-hmm. that is this comic Wolverine.
Yeah. And also, like, Laura and the mom and all these people, they wouldn't even know about Wolverine if it wasn't for these comics.
Of course, right.
Mm-hmm. So it's like this is also an entry point to, like, finding each yeah. other. Yeah. yeah.
I think in a broader discussion of comic book movies, I think Fox is nailing it. I think Warner Brothers and DC are not doing that well with Superman versus Batman, mm-hmm. which was just boring. Yeah. I think Marvel's great, but they're kind of all the same. I don't know. Iron Man and Doctor Strange are kind of the same movie with different characters. But rated R Deadpool and rated R Logan, I think, are great. Mm-hmm. The writers can do what they want. The directors can do what they want. The actors can do what they want. They can make it very funny. They can make it very violent. They can make it very dark. They can make it very serious. Whatever they want to do, they can do. Whereas the Marvel movies are just kind of lukewarm. They're a little bit of everything. They're a little bit funny. They're a little bit serious. They're a little bit violent. You know, these movies can say, we want to be all the way this or all the way that. We want to be a perfect kernel of a movie as opposed mm-hmm. to something that appeals to everyone. Mm-hmm. And it works. Deadpool is one of the most successful rated R movies that was ever made. Logan just broke $500 million at the box office. Like, mm-hmm. these are good movies. These are effective movies, and these are profitable movies.
Mm-hmm. The director, James Mangold, mentioned that he wanted to make a superhero movie like no one else had ever made. So he thought the best way to do that was to make a superhero movie like no one else had ever made.
And he absolutely did.
Mm-hmm. And it isn't for everyone. I like how you said that.
No.
It's cringe-worthy, the amount of gore, for a lot of people, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It's
For Logan?
Yes. It's breathtaking.
Yeah.
Well, Deadpool is pretty.
Oh, yeah.
Deadpool is
gory as well. Right.
Is as well.
I forgot about that. It was more cartoony in Deadpool, even though it was still violent. Mm-hmm.
The action scenes were great, I thought. I'm hot and cold with action scenes, and I'm hot on Logan. I thought they were very well directed. It was very clear who was attacking who and when, as opposed to some of these movies, which are just real fast cuts of people swinging by themselves in front of a camera, jammed together. Like, this one was very well choreographed.
And you also get to see what I like about it, too, is that Logan, it sometimes struggles.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. when you think, like, wow, Logan's done, all of a sudden he just somehow pulls inside and just goes at it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of the things I enjoy about Logan, Wolverine's character, is that he's been made indestructible, but that is really, you know, with adamantium in his body, but it's really kind of left him vulnerable because of that personal conflict he always has mm-hmm. of, you know, this has been done to me. Even though it's a superpower, I don't want it necessarily.
Right. Yeah.
So you spend a lot of time looking at him. At the beginning of this movie, you're like, okay, now we're going to focus on the vulnerability mm-hmm. of him. But then he comes out, like you said, and goes nuts.
Yeah. Yeah, so it sounds like we all liked it. That's great. So that's Logan. That's in theaters now. It'll be at the library just as soon as we can get it. But it'll be probably not until the fall or winter that mm-hmm. it's finally out on Blu-ray DVD. But come in and check out Deadpool. We've got that. So get you by in the meantime. All right. So that was the Pint and Click podcast for today. Thank you, Joel. Thank you, Kristen. Thank you, Tony, as always. And we'll see you next time.
All right. Bye.